extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. Club and country, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies, David Goss. It was not scintillating. It will not send us into the night seeking out brown liquor, but it was a win in the first game of the Gold Cup for the U.S. men's national team, and that is something that Mexico cannot say. What's up, boys? 1-0.
How we doing?
Haiti? Handled that. We'll get to all the coming up, all the pleasantries.
All late night, Charlie.
Yeah.
How you doing?
What's up?
How you doing? What's up with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going
it's
all right.
11 o'clock on the East Coast. You know what? Every time I watch the U.S. Women's National Team, I get hyped now because I know the future is bright.
Even that game got you hyped even. I mean, I was just thinking, we came off the Nations League, mm-hmm. and I remember after that, we're sitting in here, and you were there, and we were buzzing. We were feeling it.
This buzz
is a little... It's a little slower coming. Hopefully it's more of a crescendo, right? Yeah. Anyway.
Would you like my analysis? That one word?
Yeah.
Give me the one word.
Give me the one word that's bouncing around in Charlie Davis's mind right now about this performance, about this win, about this start to the Gold Cup.
You ready?
Yeah.
Unflattering.
Mm.
That's the word that comes to mind. But given that this is the first game of the group stage against Haiti, who are much better than their ranking suggests, it's a win. And I think that's what is going to take this group in the locker room. I think that's what Greg Berhalter is going to say to this group. Hey, it wasn't clean. It wasn't the best. This is a work in progress. But the ultimate goal is getting 3 points. We did that. So now let's try and move forward as a group. And
the performance, you say, is unflattering.
Yes,
I need it is. I need some other words here. Doyle, give me your word.
I thought it was timid up until about the last 20 minutes or so. I thought that the team, the 11 that he put out at the start of the game, their tempo was a little bit too slow, and they looked scared to make a mistake. They weren't necessarily scared of Haiti. I think they were scared to make a mistake, maybe lose the ball in a bad spot. And especially once they got that early lead, they were timid. And Haiti kind of knocked them around a little bit in the second half, and then Berhalter made some good subs, changed the formation a little bit, and things got better. But again, as Charlie was saying, it's, you know, you get a win in the first game of a tournament of a group stage, and that's fine. And look, we just watched the Euros and Copa America. We remember how some of these teams that went very far in these tournaments started their, you know, group stage as well. So we like. Not every game is going to be an A-plus effort, but I feel like we learned some stuff. You got 3 points. You got a couple of good performances. So take the W and move on.
Go in the thesaurus, Dave. What do you got for me?
Can my word be prelude?
Is that a word that I'm allowed to use? What would be wrong with that? Of course.
Because I think, as Charlie and Doyle said, the key was the win. I don't think a lot of things that excite me happen in this game of, oh, this is something Greg's going to try, or this player in a way that I didn't expect, or a player overperforming was really what happened in this game. But I think it was, to Doyle's point, the start of hopefully a long month, right? And so to put yourself
a
on
long
safe
month,
ground.
Not a long month. You know,
get excited about it. But put yourself on that stable ground. Do something Mexico couldn't do for themselves yesterday, but what Canada did earlier, which is 3 points here. There's a really good shot you're out of the group already. So put yourself on that stable ground to now try other things, to get the group to build a little bit more together, to gain a little bit of confidence for some of these young players like a Busio, like a Shaq Moore, like a James Sands, who got opportunities here today, Joe Akini as well. So I think a lot of good things for the U.S. national team happened today. I don't know if they were good to watch.
Mine is unfamiliar. It felt like they were unfamiliar with each other at times, unfamiliar with how they'd play off each other, unfamiliar with the pace that it was going to require to break down this Haiti team. Hopefully familiarity builds. We've talked about that. We're going to break it all down. We've got your complete U.S. Haiti breakdown. We're doing it hot. No waiting until tomorrow. No rewatches or two. Scuff, Total Soccer Show, looking at you.
We're doing it live right now. This very second. We'll do it live after every single U.S. men's national team match
show like that?
Of the Gold Cup. I know, that's the way it is. I love what they do, but we're here right now, all right? We're going to do this at the final whistle of every match in the Gold Cup for the U.S. and beyond if the U.S. get knocked out. In World Cup qualifying, so set your clocks by us, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app. We're going to be talking U.S. men's national team and CONCACAF. Also, you might be listening to us right now, but in the future, these are going to be podcasts as well. This week, they will be our podcasts, our Monday and Thursday. So Sunday night and Thursday night.
And then, I hope it's going well.
I know.
For you.
In the future, I
hope
everything
is good. I hope it's cooler than what it was at this current moment.
It's balmy today in Kansas City. This is all good. This was an easy game for them to play in the month of July. And we'll get to more on this show because we're not just talking U.S. national team. This is CONCACAF. It's Canada. It's Mexico who have some jangly nerves here because they drew against Trinidad and Tobago, didn't get a goal out of it, and saw Chucky Lozano go down and be out of the tournament after that ugly collision. And we have more on Curaçao being out of the tournament. The bummer that is Guatemala filling in their place, probably playing right now against El Salvador. Really cool match, actually, for
Alex Roldan. Toyota Stadium.
Yeah.
Crowd is buzzing. Not that I have the volume on. I'm totally locked into you guys.
Perfect. Perfect. Just watch Alex Roldan because this was like the distillation of his choice, right? It was Guatemala or El Salvador. Ah. Come on, Hugo. Come on, Hugo. What do you
think? They don't love a storyline.
Apparently not. All right, Doyle, dig in. Haiti, U.S., what were the nitty gritty things that got you excited or maybe just got you thinking a little bit?
Well, I mean, Kellen Acosta's play overall on both sides of the ball. Like, I have knocked Kellen Acosta repeatedly in the past for not finding enough of the game, either in possession or defensively. And if you go back and you watch the first half, but especially I think about the first 20 minutes until the U.S. got a little bit lethargic, his ability to conduct things, even without touching the ball, was really impressive. He was the one who I think came out from the bell kind of understanding that this was his shot to make a push up the roster. And I think he made the most of it. Covering for Shaq Moore when Moore would overlap. Like, if you go back and you watch that pattern of play, Acosta was always dropping deep to cover him. And then the one time that he makes that bursting run through the lines, it ends up leading to the game's only goal. So I was kind of jacked on that, on the performance from Kellen Acosta, because everybody who's watched this kid for a decade has said he has so much talent, and if he can bring it to bear, he will be a special player for this team. And it's always happened in fits and starts. And he's 25, 26 years old now, so there's kind of a now or never approach to it, especially with all the talent coming through. So I was happy to see that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we saw when he first got to Colorado for a large stretch. And then I think he started, I guess not last season, maybe the season before that way as well. And when he's on, he's on. And he's awesome to watch, and he does it all. And I agree with you. I thought he was the most promising player for a while for the U.S. national team. There's question marks in my mind watching it of, so what does this make him? Just a depth chart guy at that one of those eights is part of the problem with the way this played out.
But here's the thing, David. He finished the game as a right wing back. And we remember he finished the game against Mexico as a left fullback. And we know that he played the game, most of the game against Mexico in that double pivot, kind of as a double six. In this game, he was a part of the two eights. So if you have the ability to play four spots at a relatively high level, which he has shown now against CONCACAF competition, and we know that we're going to have the compressed schedule and qualifying, he's in the game day roster against everybody, because if there's an injury, he gives you cover at four different spots, and there aren't a lot of players on this roster who could say that. So I think it was a big night for Kellen Acosta, and like, overall, that's probably what I'm most jacked about, though I think eventually we're going to talk to the final 20 minutes and, Daryl Dike coming on, 3-5-2, Bustio and Sands, and I think Miles Robinson overall having a good night as well.
I think when I watch this game, I look at a lot of players who are looking at the A team and they're saying, man, Nations League, what a way to win that trophy. How can I get my foot in the door? And so when you step onto the pitch against a team that is formidable, I mean, the Haitians, they are creative. They kept possession at times. They can create chances. They just don't have finishers. They're not clean around the 18. If they were clean, if they had a Kyle Larin, if they had a Cavallini, if they had players who could really hurt you, like a Canada, in the third game of the group stage, there might be, this might be a different outcome. But what I like about this team is, just like we saw in the Nations League semifinal against Honduras, it was ugly. Everyone was like, oh, this isn't pretty. This isn't good. You know, there weren't combinations. There weren't dangerous in the attacking third. People were talking about the striker position. Josh Sargent, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? There's no way he's going to play. And he starts the final. I look at this group and I'm saying, who has the ability to make that step? Kellen Acosta, Doyle, you touched on it. He's a player who can play multiple positions. He's a player that's proven that he has the quality to play with that A team. The problem is, whether he's playing right back or whether he's playing as an eight, he's not a starter.
Yeah,
he's never going to play in front of Reggie Cannon right now, or in front of Tyler Adams at the six or eight, Weston McKennie at the six or eight. But this is a player, if Tyler Adams isn't healthy, he's stepping in. If Weston McKennie's not available, he's stepping in. And you trust him. He can cover ground. He's good technically, and I love that. A player like Jackson Ewell, on the other hand, you would expect him to come out and prove, man, I had a mistake. I didn't play the best in Nations League. Now with a lesser quality an opponent against the Haiti, I gotta prove myself. Didn't. But Abusio comes in and says, hey, this is my opportunity. I'm going to ride the wave. I'm playing in front of my home fans, and says, I'm going to leapfrog you in the depth chart. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that from a kid who's still growing, but showing, hey, I'm ready for the next opportunity, and I'm going to grab it with both hands. So
do we think Busio did make that jump? Did you see enough, or do you think Greg would have seen enough to make that leap? And it's in combination. Yes. It's what Busio did, but it's also the last couple of performances for Ewell as well. And we're kind of honing in on this six deep lying midfield. I mean, these are the spots that for World Cup qualifying for the future, those are sort of the spots that are getting all the attention because they're a little bit uncertain.
Well, it's the strength of the team. The strongest part of the U.S. men's national team is the midfield. That's the heart of the team. And you're talking about Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, and whether it's Gio Reyna playing in front of them,
But Charlie, explain to me how Busio got over Jackson Ewell in this. Those guys aren't here, right?
Because Jackson Ewell hurt himself. He took himself out of the equation. People were already saying they don't want to see him. We've seen enough.
But Charlie, people said that, and then Greg Berhalter started him.
Yeah,
and
look, I think I like that from a coach. I'm going to give you the opportunity to sink or swim.
I don't think. Look at the way Greg Berhalter has handled this national team, and mm-hmm. how slowly he's brought pieces in, right. and how long he's given players opportunities. I think to prove themselves. I don't think Busio made that jump tonight. I'd be shocked if he did. He might start against Martinique. They're the worst team in the group. It's a great place in his home stadium to get him a start potentially, but there's no way that in Greg Berhalter's depth chart that,
yes,
that Busio has
I disagree. Mm-hmm. I disagree.
I'm with Charlie
because
here.
Jackson Ewell took himself out. It's not that Busio played so well that he jumped them. It was a combination of him coming in and doing a solid job, but it was more importantly that Jackson Ewell came in and didn't have the best games, was losing possession, was not covering ground, was getting beat on the dribble, was getting turned. That's why he dropped in the depth chart.
What did you see from Busio, Doe?
So a lot of the stuff that Jackson Ewell used to do, right? Like Jackson Ewell used to get all over the ball, and if he made a mistake, he would fight to get back in the play. He would immediately want to get back on the ball. He wouldn't let it get to him. And Jackson Ewell, for whatever reason, has lost that in his last three appearances. Busio's got it. Like the first two touches he had, he left passes short. And I was like, oh man, this kid, maybe he got in over his head at 19. He's still learning the position. But those were about the only bad touches he had all night. And both times he lost the ball, he immediately fought to get it back, which matters to me. I'm not asking him to make zero mistakes. He's 19 years old. He had basically never played as a number six other than a few games before this year. He is still learning the position. He is going to be learning how to play at the international level. I expect mistakes. What I didn't want to see and what he didn't show was he didn't get rattled. And Jackson Ewell looked rattled from the jump. And so going into the next game, I don't think Greg Berhalter is about to throw Jackson Ewell in the trash. But if Busio's not ahead of him now, some questions deserve to be asked. So it was, I mean, it was a very, it wasn't a perfect performance from him, but he elevated the play of the team around him. And that is the job of the number six in this system. And if you can check that box and you check a bunch of other boxes in terms of athleticism and reading the game and mentality, then you're going to get more minutes.
I would argue once again, look at how long Matt Miazga got. Look at how long Josh Sargent has gotten
in the past.
I'm Zach Steffen.
It's not much time anymore.
I would argue Reggie Cannon right now.
Yeah, but there's not much time anymore.
I don't disagree with you, Charlie, but we've never had time. Like, especially since Greg took over, especially over the last year and a half, and he's still giving guys shots. So I don't disagree with what you guys are saying, and I want to see Busio start in the next game for sure, and I would like to see him get opportunities going forward in this tournament. I think one of the things with Jackson Yuhl, and I'm not positive about this, but you watch him play, he looks uncomfortable in normal situations. I wonder how much playing in San Jose is starting to affect how different the game is for him normally. And then he comes to the U.S. and it's like average half spaces. It's the fullback playing into his feet. It's center backs playing to him with a guy on his back. And he looks completely lost and he doesn't anticipate anything that's happening in normal spots. And Busio came in and has played there for the last 3 months and looks completely comfortable on top of being confident and having that technical ability. And so I wonder how much that's starting to wear on Jackson Yuhl. It's just how different the game is when he goes from one to the other, even though he has spent a ton of time with the U.S. camp over the course of this year.
Nice to see Williamson in this game, Eric Williamson as well. Came in, didn't have quite as much of the impact, but had less time to do it, and the U.S. were protecting that lead. 1-0 against Haiti. The first game of the night, it was 4-1 for Canada over Martinique. We'll touch on that here in just a little bit. Anybody else impress you? Because we talked about it in the pregame show, and we're doing the Twitter Spaces pregame. As we go through the lineups, really, this is, yes, about winning, but it's mostly about kind of getting your ducks in a row before World Cup qualifying. So as you see the conditions you'll play in, as you see the yellow card suspensions roll in, perhaps, or injuries or form or whatever, you can go down the line and sort of plug and play and get results. Center backs between Zimmerman and Miles Robinson, was there one that stood out? Was it sort of an even playing field for them?
So I thought they both were really good in this game. The thing that I wanted to watch out for was who put out those fires, and Miles Robinson got in those situations more often because Vines got caught really high up the field, didn't have support from midfield either three or four times in the first half. The first 35 seconds of the game, it could have been 1-0, and then Etienne could have had two goals otherwise, but he respects too much. Shout out to Derek Etienne Jr. for doing it for the U.S. men's national team this time. We got you later on. But Robinson, I thought, handled all those moments really well and then started to organize it a bit better over the course of that side. Didn't get caught in possession at all, even when the U.S. started to get pressed. And with Walker Zimmerman, he doesn't do it a lot with Nashville, but he stepped forward and he clipped a couple balls over the top into Shaq Moore or Kellen Acosta, and he looked super comfortable creating out of that right center back position. So I thought they both had a pretty good night. I think Miles Robinson, we talked about on the Twitter Spaces before, he has a higher ceiling. He can do more things at an elite level. It's all about how often he can do it and putting it together. I think tonight was a really good start to what he has to show is 5 or 6 games of doing this over the course of this summer.
I agree with almost all that. I will say that Robinson looked a little tentative the first 10 minutes of the game. I think he lost his first two like physical confrontations, and that was maybe a bit of a wake-up call for him. But he seems like a smart kid, right? Like, he seems like someone who absorbs the game around him. So I don't think he'll have trouble meeting the level of physicality in the games to come. And I'm still really high on him. James Sands impressed me. When he came in, they went to, you know, 5 at the back or 3 at the back, if you want to describe it that way. And it's interesting because James Sands, over the past few years with NYCFC, he has been purely a defensive animal. Like, whether he's playing D-mid or in the middle of that back 5, he is there for defense. He is not there to help break the press. But if you go back and you watch the last 15, 20 minutes of the game, with Haiti pressing up, Sands was able to pretty consistently sort of reverse away from the first line of pressure and put his teammates in good spots to break through. So I thought he was very clever in his distribution. Missed one long ball, which wasn't great. And then his angles in terms of cutting off attacks were superb. And it's good to see, because throughout qualifying, you're not just going to play in a back four every time. You want to have that ability, that flexibility to play with a back three or a back five if the game calls for it from the start, or if you need to switch to it in the run of play. And obviously, Sands has been super comfortable with that in at the MLS level, and then he had a good cameo doing that tonight. Shaq Moore was really good.
Yeah, we got to hit Shaq Moore.
I feel bad for him though. Like, was he like he played himself up to fifth on the right back depth chart? You know,
hey, listen, coming into
any other position,
coming into this game, I had him at ninth, so he moved up four spots in one game.
There you go.
And I love Reggie, but I think we've kind of people have penned him in as right back, and I don't think he's played well with the U.S. men's national team over the last year. I don't think there's a performance you can point to and say, this is the starting right back for this national team. So Serginho Dest is a starting left back. I think that's an open spot. And I think for a lot of people, they've ignored that, which is fine. You know, I wanted to see Aaron Herrera in this tournament. Obviously, that's not going to happen. And there's a lot of good young right backs coming through. But if Shaq Moore plays this way, and he does it continuously over the course of this tournament, there's no reason that he's not in a roster if you're coming in for three games. And the other thing I'd say is, to Doyle's point about that back three, back five, I'm starting to think that if Tyler Adams isn't healthy, what are we doing playing with a single defensive midfielder? And if we can't find a partner for John Anthony Brooks, is it not safer to just have two? And so I think that that has to be in the rotation even more. And I think it has to be an option.
I get what you're saying, but I do think that we're letting our nerves cloud what's actually happening here. Like, we played Haiti mostly in a 4-3-3, and they threatened goal like twice on the counterattack. We played Honduras mostly in a 4-3-3. They threatened goal, I think, once on a counterattack.
I think it was more than that in that first half with Elise.
Fair, or twice on the counterattack. Now, been watching the U.S. for 35 years, and I don't have a photographic memory of every game, but like every time we play these teams, no matter what the formation is, no matter how much of the ball we have, they have always been dangerous at least a little bit on the counterattack. So I think there's this false sense of we're giving up these chances only because we're trying to play with Regista and be possession dominant through the 4-3-3. And that's not necessarily the case, because whatever formation, whatever principles of play we've had over the decades, teams have always been dangerous against us, against anyone in the region on the counterattack. That's just how it is. And so I kind of like the fact that Berhalter still has his system and still has his ideas for how he wants the game to be played, and he's sticking to it, and we're getting results. Like the result in the Honduras game, we should have been 3-0 up by the 25th minute. We just couldn't finish. And in this one, we hit the woodwork twice in the first 20 minutes, right? And then got the goal. So it's... I mean, there's a little bit of results bias here from a game that honestly we controlled and weren't particularly threatened that often.
Yeah. So I do wonder, though, when we do go to El Salvador for the first game, if we will control the ball. So then it's not just transition. Is this the group that can sit in for large stretches and hit on the counter?
We will control the ball against El Salvador.
Yeah. El Salvador, yes. Costa Rica, Honduras, maybe not as much.
But El Salvador is a yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Who played them? Charlie, you were pretty sure about Jackson Ewell and his position being played down. Who else played themselves down a depth chart in this one?
Well, Jonathan Lewis, I don't know where he was on the depth chart, but...
He was a starter in the Gold Cup, at least coming into today.
Yeah, he might have dropped down a couple spots. I don't think he was anywhere close to... the A team, so to speak. So he definitely didn't do himself any favors tonight. I think Ariola didn't have a strong game, and even considering he went down injured, and you hate to see that. I thought Jossie Zardes did a good job with his hold up play, just wasn't threatening all that much. But as far as like coming back and showing that he could still make good runs and be someone you can play the ball to and he'll keep. I thought he was, especially particularly in the first 30 minutes or so, I thought, oh, wow, he can still do that for the team. I thought Sebastian Legette didn't hurt himself, didn't help himself, kind of just right in the middle. Kellen Acosta, he's a beast. He gets all over the field.
What are you looking at right now, Charlie? You got like
he's got his notes.
Charlie's got like the he's got like the up and downs here. Like
a, yeah, I mean, I take notes throughout the game, so I literally minutes each play, things I like, things I didn't like.
Can I rewind us back to wingers? Because I feel like there's a bigger conversation there, and it goes back to that 3-5-2 as well, and also the personnel on this team.
Yeah,
I mean, Jonathan Lewis. What frustrates me with Lewis is one, and we talked about in the spaces, he's not playing for the Rapids. So then
he's
you're
not
sort of
starting.
Okay, he's not starting for the Rapids.
He one start. He has one start.
I get frustrated with Jonathan Lewis just because he gets himself into good positions to receive the ball and then doesn't seem to have either the idea or sort of the clarity to be like, this is what the moment needs, or you know what, screw it, I'm just getting to the end line and I'm whipping it low across, or I'm gonna find this ball, or I'm gonna unbalance the defense in some way. There's too many times when he gets stood up and then it peters out and this promising attack no longer was. I feel like the international level for the U.S., if we want to make these steps and be a challenger in the region and beyond, that's something you have to have your wingers be able to do, is be decisive and threaten back lines.
Well, for CONCACAF, just CONCACAF, all Jonathan Lewis needs to do is take a touch and go. Use your pace. Rely on your pace in CONCACAF. You can be one-dimensional and be super successful in CONCACAF. That's it. Because at the end of the day, everyone knows Jonathan Lewis. What separates him from any other player in his position is his pace and his acceleration. That's what distinguishes him from everyone else. And you like to see that, and because you can't teach that. So you're hoping that at one moment it's all going to click for him, that he's going to be pushed, that whenever he's about to receive the ball, he looks at the defender. Is he flat-footed? Is he leaning to the left? Is he leaning to right? And that first touch is going to take him right by that defender. And then once you get by that defender, now you're going to start to see the whole back line of the opposing team shift, whether it's one player or two players, and you're going to create space for others. We're not seeing that from him. That's literally all you have to do. That's it. And he's not doing it. And he wasn't doing it in MLS. And he's not doing it now.
So I asked Doyle this when we were in a little meeting. There's no, like, Reyna, the guys that he's leaning on at the first team level, and you said it in the pregame, Doyle, are more come inside, create guys. All mm-hmm. the wingers in this pool are vertical.
Yeah.
What do you think Greg is trying to do in this tournament? What's he trying to suss out? Is he trying to find that other option that he might need in qualifying where he's just like, hey, which one of these guys is going to be it?
Yeah,
one of you show me in this tournament.
I think that was it. I think he was kind of challenging both Lewis and Areola. And unfortunately, Areola got hurt. So, I don't expect to see any more of him in this tournament. Lewis was really, really poor. And then nothing kind of worked to the point where Berhalter felt like he had to go to a 3-5-2, which is not a look that we've seen from him before with the national team or, you know, barely with the crew. I can't remember a game in which the crew played a 3-5-2 with Berhalter in charge. So I think he was kind of challenging those guys to play the role as he sees it. At the same time, we know that back in January, Lewis was saying that he won the job because Berhalter would test the wingers by seeing how many times they get behind the back line in training. And Lewis was constantly getting behind the back line in training. I didn't see any of that tonight. I don't know if the U.S. had or lacked the personnel to make that even worthwhile. So it was tough. It's a little bit mismatched. This roster is a little bit lopsided, and even more so now with Areola hurt. And it leaves me scratching my head a little bit, but it's also kind of like a happy accident because I like the 3-5-2. You know, like I like the idea of getting a couple of strikers out there in certain situations. It's not a game. It's not a formation that I expect the U.S. to start in a bunch, but it's one where the U.S. might have to finish in it. So getting to see it for 20 minutes in a game that actually means something, I kind of count that as a win.
It's also just talent, right? Yeah. Name a winger that didn't get taken to this.
Kate Cowell. Kate Cowell's the one.
That's the one. As I was thinking about Areola being out, like, who would you call?
So if Caden Clark hadn't had the appendectomy, I could have seen him getting into this roster as a winger and being one of those half-space guys because he operates in the half-space for the Red Bulls, whether he's been a number 10 in a 4-2-3-1, or a winger as he played last year under Carnell, or now this year as he's playing a 10 in a 4-4-2 diamond. He's always working in those half spaces. So he would have made a lot of sense, but it's all woulda, coulda, shoulda now.
Yeah, so I don't think there's a winger that didn't get called in, unless you want to go with Cade Cowell, which is fine. But again, he's, 17 and has started 10 MLS games in his career, which either way, Busio's not played that many. But still, I think that you're just talking about, it's a national team, and this is your pool. And behind the starting wingers, these are the guys that you know, Greg Berhalter needs to see if he can trust them and play them in big games. And he does trust Paul Arriola. We all understand that at this point. And then Jonathan Lewis, clearly he's close to that. He continues to try and push him into this group as well as in Olympic qualifying. But I don't think there's a mental like, oh, these are come inside wingers, so now I'm going to see what it looks like with these guys. This is your depth chart.
Yeah.
Like, this is your roster. Timothy Weah, obviously, is probably above these guys. Maybe Brendan Aaronson as well.
Oh, for sure.
They're not coming to this tournament. So there was no reason to bring them here. It wouldn't make any sense. I think Aaronson played for Salzburg yesterday in a friendly. So this is kind of the group you're looking at, because Chris Mueller's fallen off the face of the earth over the last 3 months.
Give me the two striker thoughts, Charlie. You were doing the big head shake.
Yeah, I just can't imagine the thought of two strikers when we don't even have one. That for me, you know, for CONCACAF, Gold Cup, with your B team, you're experimenting, fine. But we all know that we're never going to see a two-striker system with this group when games are on the line. That's just not happening. Unless you're down a goal and you need to throw people up, whatever. But to start a match, we're not going to see two strikers because we don't even have one that we can rely on, let alone two. So I think we just got to focus on finding who that true number nine is, who's going to be the goal scorer,
what
who's going to be the player.
Exist, Charlie? What if none of these guys are that player? Or what if Giassi's as close as we have right now?
I mean, we got the job done against Mexico with one.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
So, and again, these are young strikers. They're still developing. Josh Sargent, we've seen, he's got the work rate, hasn't really put together with the U.S. men's national team yet. For the goals, putting himself in the right position, I think he started to do that in Nations League. But we know the under 17 level, the under 20 level, he balled. He showed he's a quality player, that he's going to score goals, that he can hold up the ball, that he can create in the final third. It hasn't transitioned yet with the full men's national team, in large part because at Werder Bremen, he's literally playing all over the place. So he's not consistently playing striker. He's playing at on the wing on the right. He's playing on the wing on the left. He's playing as a 10. He's playing up top. And
I'm bringing you back,
more
early.
Than. Whether or not he's relied on defending. So I'm just saying, we can't talk about two strikers when we don't even have
one.
Yeah,
we can. We just watched two strikers play. What did you see from DK and Zardes? Could it work? Like,
I don't know. Those two. It could work with DK and Sargent, though. If we're chasing a goal late and you put DK and Sargent on, that works.
No? against Haiti, or against, are we talking, you know,
I'm thinking
a top 20 team in the world.
No, I'm thinking about World Cup qualifying. Everything I'm thinking about right now 100%. Is World
That's
Cup
all
qualifying.
That matters.
That's all I care about. The reason I liked the two striker look tonight for the final 20 minutes is because it is plausibly something that we will have to see in World Cup qualifying at some point. And I thought that DK, his movement was actually pretty comfortable in it. I thought the midfield made a lot of sense with it. And the other thing is, I think we have a lot of fullbacks who are maybe more comfortable as wingbacks. So if we're in a situation where it's Dest on one side and Robinson on the other, I kind of like the idea of having, you know, three defenders back there to give them a little bit of cushion. And then, you know, two big targets roaming around the box. Again, I agree with you that we're not going to see it from the start ever, but I think we might see it at some point at the finish.
I hope not, because that means we're not scoring goals.
Well, that's a reality that I think we faced at times, Charlie. Can we give poor Sam Vines a little credit here? The man scores the game-winning goal. I don't think I've said his name one time.
I was going to get to him. You didn't even let me get to him.
Well, but you had your laundry list, Charlie. I was just trying
to narrow Weedy's anti-list now? Yeah.
Oh,
what a heel turn. Wow.
Yeah, this is crazy.
All right, sorry, I keep lists in my heart at all times. Give me the full list on that note.
Good goal. I think he was out of position multiple times. He got caught out of position. I think he still needs to get stronger. We've all talked about his strength and getting pushed off the ball.
You didn't like him just getting knocked over.
Getting absolutely bullied. Getting bullied. Yeah. As a left back, yes, it's great you can get forward and get involved in attack and score a goal, his first international goal. That's incredible. But outside back's first priority is to defend. And if you're getting bullied – and people on the back line can't rely on you to defend 1v1, then you kind of lost the plot. Because at the end of the day, we want you defending first. We have players to attack. We have players who to create goals. If you can add to that, fantastic. But I need my outside backs to be gritty, to be able to be physical, to be able to defend 1v1, and get forward after we won possession.
I agree with Charlie, and I thought Vines was going to be one of the pleasant surprises this tournament, because I think he can establish himself at left back as well as anyone has at right back outside of Sergiño Dest and maybe affect that decision, but he didn't play that way today, even with the goal. So I agree with Charlie. He needs to be able to do his full job at 100%, and then, okay, if you're going to chip into the attack in the way you did, that's great, but you need your role on this team needs to be, I can guarantee what I'm going to get from him defensively. I can trust him. I can put him alongside maybe other guys, whether it's at winger or at center back, that are figuring it out. He needs to be that guy in this pool. Otherwise, Sergiño Dest is going to start at that spot, because I think you have those players at right back, and clearly Dest is comfortable out there. So I didn't think that was one of those nights for Vines. So hopefully, though, the physicality part, and the thing about Vines' game that we've seen is he scales really quickly. He got into the pro game, and it took him like a month and a half to be a solid starter. And from there, his steps up the ladder have been fairly quick. Every few months, he seems to add something and play at a higher level for Colorado. So the hope is he can build on that this tournament.
So we have David here hitting us up on the Twitter comments. Who's going to be the creative presence for this team? Because this is just one game down. The hope is that there are six games. Five more to go, obviously, to get to the final on August 1st in Las Vegas. Where does creativity come from? Where does chance creation come from on this team? Because it doesn't necessarily seem like the wingers, unless they're put into space, are going to be that. But somebody's got to find the way to unbalance a defense to open those gaps. Who will it be, Doyle?
The system. It's supposed to come from the positional play. Like, it's supposed to come from creating overloads on those right side that allows Shaq Moore to get up the flank and then get to the optimal assist zone for pullbacks across the six or to the penalty spot. And guys knowing their roles and knowing the blueprint of how the machine is supposed to work and then executing it. And they didn't do a great job of executing it in this one. But as we said at the top of the show, it's the first game of a tournament. And you know, it's usually a struggle. It's almost always a struggle for everybody. I mean, think back to 2017. The U.S. won the 2017 Gold Cup. I think they drew that first game 1-1 against Panama. The 2007 Gold Cup, I think Charlie was on that team. It was a 1-0 skin-of-their-teeth win against Guatemala off a Dempsey goal. Like, so this is...
There's a 1-0 at this stadium against Guadalupe, I think, with Jozy Altidore having to hit like a crazy golazo just to win that game.
Right. We had the 2-0 against Canada, I think, in Detroit. One of the Gold Cups, which was like a snoozer.
Wasn't that a friendly?
No, that was opening of Gold Cup group stage. Landon bailed us out, but we were not good in that
game. Yeah, and it was Dempsey at the back post. Yeah.
And we were not good in that game either.
But back to the question, with the way modern soccer works with positional play, like the creativity is supposed to come from the movements of the players and the ball in concert in order to create overloads that create gaps in the opposing team. And the U.S. did some of that tonight, but not nearly as well as enough as they should have. If you're asking, is there a number 10 on this team or is there a devastating creative winger like Pulisic? There is not. They're just
no. I'm more
saying there. I was going to say, just to piggyback off you, if you don't have one player who can break a team down, there's not one player in this attacking third who can dribble a player 1v1 and take them on and strike fear into an opponent. That doesn't exist with this team. So what they have to do is counter press, create chances off of turnovers. They have to play quick and create opportunities on the wing. As we saw, Shaq Moore had a number of crosses. The runs weren't particularly sharp, and the balls were a little, I'd say, you know, a couple feet off from being in the right spot, but the idea was there. So yep. I think it comes down to execution, and it comes down to being able to play quickly in transition, and that's how they're going to score goals in this tournament.
Can I ask, what do you guys think of Joe Hakimi?
I think he's a work in progress. Yeah.
Yeah.
Worth
seeing more of him, but he didn't grab the chance with both hands. I didn't think, but like I was happy to see, you know, 60 more minutes of him. It was a little weird that he got subbed on and subbed off, and I felt kind of bad for him. But you know, there's promise there.
Yeah. I thought he looked more comfortable out wide than I expected. I hadn't seen him play there. And he looked comfortable in that spot and not as a take guys on 1v1, but he seemed to understand how to use the runs of Moore. And while he didn't score it, I like how confidently he took the chance that hit the post. It came off the first touch and it looked like he had space to sort of attack the goalkeeper and maybe lay it off, maybe try and go by him. But he thought he had the angle and he wasn't that far off. You could see the wheel away. That's such a brutal moment. When the player goes, he knows he's on the celebration. He's already got it rolling through his mind, and then it hits the post.
Charlie, what do you do when you wheel away and then you hit the post? You got to play. It off. You act like, oh, I was just headed.
You go. Charlie only ever hit the back of the net, guys. Come on.
The funny thing is, when he was doing it, I was like, oh yeah, I've been there. You're like, you hit it, and when you hit it, it comes off your foot. You think it's destined for the back of the net, that you put it in a good enough spot where the keeper can't touch it.
You think everything that comes off your foot
That's not true. You know when you make good contact and that you thought that you got the angles right, that you can start to peel off. And then maybe it doesn't curve as much as you thought, or it tails the other way.
Your protractor was backwards. All right, let's peel away from Haiti. This is
Hold on one sec, Weeby. I just want to make one last point. To Charlie's point about this roster lacking anyone who could beat a guy off the dribble in the final third and create danger off of that. What really changed with Busio and then especially Williamson coming on, Haiti was pressing up. And both of those guys were able to beat the Haitian defenders off the dribble and just create a little bit of space far upfield. And that would put the Haitian back line and defensive midfield into positions where they were trying to decide whether they wanted to step to the ball or drift back and kind of protect passing lanes. And that's where the U.S. was able to get, I think, the most creative. And they weren't creating a ton of chances, but to get into the best spots in this game.
But like Williamson had one where he floats through three guys breaking out of the defensive half, and then he holds himself up and plays off. But you had the two strikers in front of you keep attacking and make something happen. He kind of like stopped himself. But I agree with Doyle that you see when Williamson's on, and especially if a player's running at him with pace, he's comfortable bouncing around guys or dancing around players. And
he's got that Ozzy Alonso shoulder dip that sort of always throws off the first. Right now?
What was that guy? A little bachata or something. Right there.
Oh, man. Let's look ahead here. And all credit to Haiti. I think they performed pretty well in this one, considering what they went through beforehand. And this has been it's a feature of our society and our world still, of course, missing some big players here. Frenzy Perot is the biggest one. He had scored a hat trick like a week ago for Haiti to help them get into this point. He was not there, COVID-19. We'll talk about Curaçao in a second as well, but let's look ahead. Martinique on Thursday. We'll be here for the post-game show afterwards once again. What do you want to see against Martinique? Whether that be a lineup change, positionally, a good performance, what is on your wish list, Charlie, for that one?
I'd like to see Eric Williamson from the start. I'd like to see Busio from the start. I'd like to see DK from the start. And I think from that standpoint, you know, Matt Turner, I think, didn't hurt himself in this game. he's competing with, still in the running for the number one job with Horvath and Zach Steffen. I think those are the front three runners when it comes to the goalkeeper position. They're undoubtedly the best in the pool. So for the midfield, continuing to figure out ways to break teams down by playing quick. And like you said, if they are getting pressed, they have the ability to turn their defender and create some space and then take that space and make the right decision with the next pass. Whether it's DK running into the channel, I'd like to see him play alone up top and see what he can do. But again, this is a team that you want to see goals. The next game should be all about getting on the same page, playing into the channels, creating space in behind by stretching the back line, creating chances off of set pieces, just being able to come together as a team, knowing that the biggest match is the Canada match. And if you can take another step forward, which is all about preparation and making sure that you're the right frame of mind, that's going to allow you to have the best performance in the final group stage, final match of the group stage against Canada, because you have to take care of business game by game. You do it against Martinique, you score goals, the team's going to be feeling good, and hopefully we get the matchup we're all hoping for in that last match.
Dave, what do you want?
Well, it'll be interesting because I think the most dangerous part for Canada against Martinique was Tejan Buchanan and his ability to find space and dribble down that left side. So that's the thing we're talking about the U.S. not having. So it'll be interesting to see how the U.S. maybe creates chances, and it might be an opportunity to try and get Vines higher, or if it is with wingbacks, whatever it is. But I'd like to see, I think Charlie kind of laid them out. I especially want to see the two center backs return. I want to see that partnership grow. I want the opportunity and the platform for them to prove that it's their spot. And that doesn't happen by rotating in and out and rotating in and out unless you have cards and issues. I'd like to see Busio from the start as well. I think this is a safe opportunity to put him into, to not overwhelm him and to kind of get him going as a starter at a national team level at such a young age. Williamson as well would be really nice to see. And I think Daryl Dika has just started all 11 positions, so we should probably get on that.
If it's Busio and Williamson, where does that leave sort of the equation between Acosta and Leggett?
It's one of the other two. Now, in this game, you could push Leggett to the wing at this point with, I don't know who else plays out there if you're starting in the 4-3-3, and we've seen Leggett play out there for the Galaxy a ton over the last few years, and obviously came up as a winger. So that could be an option, but the other is, Acosta picked up a yellow card in this one. Two is a suspension. It's a tournament.
Ariola's out.
Yeah, you're going to have to rotate guys anyway. So I think there's a ton of space in that midfield to fit guys in if you want to.
Yeah, it's a great point. Don't risk him into Martinique when you need him against Canada. Doyle, what do you want to see against Martinique Thursday?
I think Charlie hit the nail on the head. Just be quicker with the ball. Be quick, be decisive, be ruthless. Make sure you're the ones conducting the game. We all know what the system is at this point. We all know what makes it work and what doesn't. And more than anything else, it's decisiveness. These guys have to be willing to take those risks and have to know that if they don't, that hurts worse than actually taking the risk and making the mistake.
And it's twofold. It's one, you haven't put yourself in attacking opportunities. And it's the second, and Charlie brought it up before, if you're going to create a chance to have counter-pressing, then you need dangerous turnovers to counter-press on. And so if you're super safe the whole time, then the turnovers are mistakes along your own back line, like Marc-Anthony Kay's against Martinique, mistakes playing out of the back. And that's worse than turning it over, trying to make an aggressive through ball at the top of the 18 where you have your numbers around the ball.
All right, let's talk Canada. Put a bow on the U.S. It's coming again Thursday against Martinique. Canada will switch it up. They'll get Haiti 4-1. Early goal, and I don't know that it had the feel of a disaster, but certainly recent history in this tournament, there have been some disasters for Canada. They would avoid that completely, and we're pretty dominant. Doyle, what'd you see from them in this game?
Just a professional performance. Martinique is not great. I think they're missing a few of the players that they had last time around, which was that team that was 2017. That team gave the U.S. a game in the group stage. This team looked a degree or two weaker, and Canada just have really good attacking talent. So I think the idea was the best defense is going to be letting these guys loose and dropping four on them, and that's what they ended up doing. You know, Canada, anytime they're under pressure, it is a bit of an adventure back there. And so it's a very different type of Canadian team than we've seen in the past, but it's a hell of a lot more fun.
I'm looking for a red, or not a red card, a yellow card for U.S. reasons, a yellow card in Steven Vitoria against Haiti. Because he got himself a really silly one. If we're looking for folks to get out, if you're going to knock back the Canada back line, take some center backs out and see what happens in this one. No Alphonso Davies. We never got to talk about that. Pulled out of the tournament.
I mean, injury.
Yeah. Right after the publicity, but right before the game started.
Same with Jonathan David, right?
Or was Davis, they never called him out.
Okay, they never called him out.
Yeah, yeah. No bait and switch for us on that one. Yeah.
No. I mean, and Herdman was pretty up. That was one of the weird parts about the Davies thing. He was up front about Jonathan David. He said, we think he's had a little bit of an injury he's been dealing with, but he said with the title run, with Champions League now coming up next year, he's going to have even more to deal with. We want to focus on World Cup qualifying with him, so he's not going to come. That's why it was odd to me that Alphonso Davies was also in the roster at the same time when clearly that's what happened with Alphonso Davies as well. But maybe Davies really did want to come to this tournament and play, and then the injury was just too much to get over, and there was no point in risking him. But it felt very interesting.
Yeah, you feel a niggle. You're like, is this worth it? Oh, it's not worth it. I'm going back to Bayern. Got to go to Munich. Got to catch a flight, guys. Canada still has a great opportunity. But Mexico, Charlie.
Oh, so we're done?
We don't have to be. We don't have to be.
No, Canada's done. Just move on.
Yeah, we don't have to.
Okay. I was just going to say, Tejan was awesome in this game, and I still think this is a huge month for him. If he is Tejan here, move.
Is Tejan here by the end of the year?
I don't think so. Really? Well, yeah, you tell us.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
I've always thought the world of Tejan. I think he's such a dynamic player, but he has this attitude that he carries. He's not afraid, that he's not going to back down, and he can play right wing back. He can play right wing. He can play right midfield, and he can play right back. He's just versatile, and he wants it. I think he's still here in by the end of the season, and I think he makes his move in the winter.
I agree with you, because I think the Revs want to win an MLS Cup, and he's a big part of doing that. And that's probably how the contract's going to play out. Speaking of contracts, Junior Hoilett does not have one. Mm. Is Canadian. Are Canadian teams that aren't playing very well at soccer right now. It would be interesting to see if they could all link up and maybe make something happen.
Could one of those
in Salt Lake City or Vancouver?
Could they possibly, one of those teams, have a left back who was a DP who's no longer around thereby?
I don't even know if Junior Hoilett on a free contract at this age is a DP.
That's true.
So could be interesting. Schmancouver, fight Caps fans.
Think about it.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Think about that. Any final thoughts on Canada?
Mark Anthony Kay tweeted after the game, the first goal's on me, but thanks to my teammates for, like, you know, picking us up. And I thought that was pretty cool to see. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Kay. It's fun, that midfield three. Eustachio is one of the best passers in the region. Yeah, Osorio was on one today.
Gotta
just
go
layoffs. Like
their back line is so suspect, though.
Yeah, for sure. But that doesn't make it less fun to watch. That makes it more fun to watch.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
From a neutral point of view. And it was good to see Kamal Miller get back on the field for that, because he is part of them being less suspect when he gets in there. Vitoria, you know his limitations. It's all physical. He can't run.
I mean, that's literally what happened on the yellow card. He was like, I got to bulldoze this dude.
I think he put two guys into the boards at some point, which was super Canadian of him. But you know what you get.
Really good on the forecheck. Yeah. Really good.
But Canada doesn't have a guarantee on a lot of, even if the ceiling's low but the floor is high, they don't have a lot of that on center back. So he's going to keep getting opportunities. Scott Kennedy is on this roster. You'd assume he would get chances.
No, Kennedy's not on the roster. They pulled him out like 3 days ago.
Oh, he went. He got on Davies.
Yeah, he got on the
private jet back to Germany.
Yeah.
He's like, wait, he's leaving early? That's my ride, guys.
I liked Kennedy a lot from what I saw of him back in June. I hadn't seen him play before those qualifiers, so they'll miss him a bit. But the 3-5-2 has been good to Canada over the past couple of months. I expect that we'll see a lot more of it. As David said, Kamal Miller being back, I think, is big for them. And Johnston from Nashville has been so steady at right center back. So it's, I think they can be had, but it's a much better team than we've seen in the past.
Win for them at the top of Group B right now in goal differential, +3, +1 for the U.S., 2 3-point performances. That's what we expect in the opening night for two of the powers in this tournament. I teased it there. I've said it a couple times. We talked about it with Hercules Gomez on this show on Thursday, and Dave's premise was that Mexico had put all the pressure on themselves. And Herc said, yeah, that sounds about right. And now there's going to be even more pressure on Tata Martino and El Tri, because you cannot draw Trinidad and Tobago, who just qualified, like literally days ago, Tuesday night, I believe, qualified for this tournament and has been struggling mightily, and lose Chucky Lozano, and potentially have the expectations that they do. Not potentially, they're expected to win it. Anything else is an absolute failure. This just got really interesting for the rest of us, at least.
You got that right. I mean, this Mexican team, I feel like they're just out of their minds right now after that Nations League final. They're trying to figure out what went wrong. How do we get back to being the top dogs in CONCACAF where there's no questions asked? And I feel like the pressure is just continuing to mount on the Mexican national team. You tie 0-0 against Trinidad and Tobago, you might pummel them, but you can't score. And it comes back to they don't have a nine. That is the weakest spot on their team. They don't have a quality nine. Raul Jimenez is out. Carlos Vela doesn't want to play for the Mexican national team. Chicharito's banging for the Galaxy, doesn't get called in. Henry Martin was whack in Nations League. So
Charlie hates Henry Martin.
He's just, yeah. And then Funes Mori, you're getting a player who the Mexican the people aren't fond of because he's Argentine in their eyes, right? And that's what Hercules Gomez had to say. So we know they're going to come on strong. This isn't the Mexican team that's not going to expect to get out of the group, or they're going to face the United States at some point, at some stage in this tournament, whether it's the semifinals or finals. But this is not the Mexican team that we've come to know over the past 4 years or so. They're not as dominant, and the confidence is wavering.
They insisted on walking the ball into the net. I mean, the chances they were creating were 2-on-1s against the goalkeeper, and they insisted on walking the ball into the net and created their own issues, which was shocking to see. The only thing about it, I could start a theory of, well, they won't even get out of the group with Curaçao having to withdraw from the tournament because of the COVID outbreak in their team. This is the weakest group in the team. You're looking at a Guatemala team that wasn't together 2 days ago and then got back together with a bunch of U23s and rolled out there, and an El Salvador group that's better than they've been, but not in that, territory with some of the competitive teams in CONCACAF. Trinidad and Tobago, I think, may have been the worst team in this group, but maybe not. I don't know. Shouts to the Soca Warriors, though. They've been like self-investigating themselves for issues for the last 2 years and weren't playing games. I mean, we saw the group they put together in January that got smoked by the U.S. down in Orlando 7-0. This is like a pretty cool moment for them. But yeah, Mexico, they'll get out of the group because they're Mexico, and that's the way it's set up for them right now, and they're going to play in front of a ton of their fans, although sometimes maybe that doesn't feel like a good thing for them with the way they react to the lack of goals. But it was a frustrating night for them for sure.
Didn't we pour one out for Curaçao?
Yeah.
We talked about them a lot over the last 2.5 years or so in CONCACAF as this rising force. And they continue to sort of stack new recruits on top of that. And they've turned over their coaching a little bit. And they had a lot to play for here. This was an opportunity to test themselves against Mexico. It was an opportunity to get through the group. It was an opportunity to do better than the quarterfinals, which they'd been to in, I think, the last tournament, right?
Yeah, like, and I think it was the last chance for that group, unfortunately, because they didn't get into the last round of World Cup qualifying.
Yep.
And they came up short. And I think you're looking at a lot of players, at least, Junior or – yeah, no, Leo Bacuna, obviously Junior is a little bit younger, but some of these star players for their group.
Martina, yep.
Yeah, that I think this was it, because you're looking at 2 more years to the next Gold Cup. They're not a part of World Cup qualifying. They're not going to be probably a part of the next World Cup qualifying cycle. So I think they've set a great stage, because now you're seeing 19 and 20-year-olds born in the Netherlands commit to Curaçao, or living in the Netherlands commit to Curaçao, which was off the table 4 years ago. Let alone maybe even 2 years ago. So I think they've set the stage. They've accomplished something, but this was probably the last chance for them to do something, get, you know, a top three spot at this Gold Cup, which I think was legitimately a chance. So it's really unfortunate to see for them.
Coming up the rest of the tournament, group C and D. C is on Monday. D is on Tuesday. You see the group standings here. There's only been three games played so far. Mexico, of course, drawing with Trinidad and Tobago. Canada win, U.S. win. Coming up tomorrow night, Jamaica-Suriname. Suriname, one of those teams that you should pay attention to. A good story there. They're up and coming as well. John Arnold covered them on the last Extra Time. Costa Rica, Guadeloupe, Qatar, Panama, and then Honduras, Grenada. Then we're back at it with Group A. Mexico has Guatemala next. And then the U.S. is going to take on Martinique on Thursday. Again, Children's Mercy Park, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. You can watch that one. FS1, Tudian, Unimas. We will, of course, be here after every single U.S. men's national team game. This is going out of the podcast. We're going to do that as well this week. This is our Monday show. Our Thursday night show is our Thursday show. And then the week after that, we're going to double dip. We're going to start doing MLS shows and Gold Cup shows. So, like, figure out some chores to do, go on a road trip, you know, charge up your phone. Get those earbuds going, because we're going to provide, I mean, it's going to be hours and hours and hours of content from us. Any last thoughts, guys? Anything that that you're thinking about before we get out of here and put a bow on this one?
Yeah, Hercules Gomez, awesome, came on our show on Thursday, and he said, most people in Mexico don't know who Efrain Alvarez is. Well, they know who he is now. He got cap tied. He came on for that unfortunate injury and then played the rest of the game for Mexico. So congrats to him. I guess, although unfortunate to see, but I've been watching this kid play since he was 13, I think, and is pretty special on the ball. And it's pretty wild to see an MLS Academy player come up and through and could be a starter for Mexico now going through this Gold Cup.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Some cap ties on the U.S. side as well.
We beat Italy for Gianluca Busio.
Yeah, and Daryl DK, take that.
Take that, Nigeria.
Yeah, we got him. He's with us now, okay? He can play all 11 positions on the field. Any last thoughts, Doyle, Charlie? You guys ready to go off into the night?
I'm ready to go off in the night. It was fine.
I've said my piece.
There you go. 3 points.
Charlie loves the 3-5-2. Next show. We'll see you next time. Yeah,
two strikers, TID. That's Charlie Davies for you. All right, that's it from us. Big thanks for you to listening. If you're checking us out on iTunes, please rate, subscribe. That would be awesome. We'll be here after every single U.S. men's national team game of the Gold Cup and into World Cup qualifying. As soon as the final whistle goes, we are streaming live anywhere where MLS streams. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app.
Charlie, that's we'll it put for Kenny us. Cooper up top. He'll be one of the two. Don't worry about it, man.
Wow, you got a Kenny Cooper reference in the end. Well done to you. We'll see you Thursday night, everybody. Enjoy your week.